So this is 1977. Tony and Marshall get on the phone.
Hi, Marshall.
Hello, Tony. Good to hear you. By the way, an important breakthrough has taken place on that dyslexia business.
Yes.
That I've been working on dyslexia with an optometrist, Arthur Hirst, for 15 years. We suddenly realized that the immobility of the TV viewer immobilizes his motor reactions. He gets the sensory inputs, but does not provide a motor response, and ergo is unable to read the written or printed word. In watching a movie, the sensory inputs go along with strong motor responses. But there's no motor responses in watching TV.
What do you mean by motor responses?
It means literally finely articulated, coordinated, muscular response of the eye.
Yes, you know, it's an interesting thing. I find with television, I never need my glasses. Because
yeah.
Once you get at the right focal distance, your eye never has to move.
That's right.
Because it's all on one flat surface.
Yeah.
But isn't the film that way with the exception
no.
of the screen?
No. Because the film is so kinetic and jumpy and jittery.
Yes, that's true.
And also, it is not so involving. It's much more, you are left much more outside the film than you are.
Excuse me one second, Marshall. There's a plug down on the bottom. Did you see? Follow that down to a plug down there. Oh, okay, fine. Then you can go down.
The film is as visual, leaves you in a detached state comparatively.
Yeah.
TV absorbs you completely. It drags you in.
Yeah.
So it's an inner trip. Film is not an inner trip.
No. It's perception, not reception.
And it's an outer trip.
Yes.
It's a dream world. Now, TV, nobody has ever accused TV of being a dream world.
You see, television is totally put together, the picture is totally put together in the brain.
Yep, I know that. I know your treatment of it, too.
Yeah, with film, the full picture is there, the motion is put together in the brain.
Yeah.
Not the picture.
But there is, the absence of motor responses is what happens in the TV generation, and they become, for example, did you know that all the over 95% of learning disability is with boys? Only 5% learning disability or less with girls.
How come?
This is a very basic matter about this motor response. The boys do not have the finely coordinated motor responses of skipping, sewing, cooking, grooming, and so on. They still play with frisbees, baseball bats, footballs, and so on. Very crude, uncoordinated, rather undelicate. That is, the motor responses of boys' games is not suited to reading. Now, we have a friend who pointed out to... he said to a friend who was a tennis coach, and he said, now, don't read any books this summer. It'll ruin your game.
Yeah.
Because it gives you only peripheral. The game, rather, demands peripheral response, and the book demands very tightly coordinated response.
Yeah.
So the book, the motor responses of the book are delicately and minutely coordinated, whereas the motor responses of TV are not.
You know, I read this piece on the brain that you had, and that you sent me.
Or about the discarnate man.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's another aspect of the immobile. If you have no body, you have sensory inputs minus motor responses.
Yeah.
You don't have motor responses if you don't have a body.
Yeah. See, so, but the thing that I felt with this piece that you wrote on the brain was that it would be just as valid if you referred to the brain and or the mind and not even refer to the two sides, because it's the fact that media uses a different part, or that electronic media as opposed to print uses a different part.
Oh yeah, very much. It's the left and right hemispheres are very much involved here. By the way, motor responses are entirely in the left hemisphere.
Are you sure of that?
Yes.
See, because they spoke of men and women being handled differently.
Yeah, but the if you look at, have you got that little treatment, The Other Hemisphere by Trotter?
No.
Well, I'll send it to you.
Okay. Also, what's the piece you spoke in Gerbner's thing? I'd love to see what
you... see. Well, I just, that piece about the discarnate man, he's printing it.
Oh.
In this coming issue.
I see.
Yeah, that's what he, that's what I meant. If you wanted to refer to it, it'll be in print.
I see.
Directly.
This piece about... Oh, you mean this piece you sent me will be in... I see. I get it now.
Now, I, the current issue of Etc. Magazine has a big section, or some eight pages or so, of the laws of the media.
Yeah, they said they sent it to me, but I didn't get it yet.
Well, it's supposed to be out. I haven't seen it either.
Okay. Let me ask you, what do you think of that piece that I wrote?
Oh, I found it very useful. Just a moment. A friend's leaving.
Bob, you on your way?
You have to run. Bob Logan here we're doing some work on a book, and he has to beat it.
Yeah.
So he's scrambling out of the way now. Well, I thought your piece was very, very useful. On my
good.
Okay. Okay, Bob.
I'm glad because it comes from a lot of your input and my experience and how it relates. You know?
Yeah.
But it's a combination of your thinking and my experience, and it's relating. And the use of this is phenomenal. You know, the use of shame in media is phenomenal. You know,
well,
it's one of the most powerful weapons.
It's a sense in which keeping up with the Joneses is entirely a shame activity.
Exactly.
And keeping upset with the Joneses is the rest of the story.
Yeah.
I think, very valuable piece.
Yeah.
You might try it on our friend. Why don't you try it on George Gerbner?
You mean, where is he? He's at...
He's the Philadelphia, the Journal of Communication.
Yes, I got the new one. Just came in yesterday or this morning.
He's in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Annenberg School.
He's never referred to my book. Never once put it... muted or put it...
Well, that is odd. Try this essay on him.
I will.
Then he'll have to refer to your book.
Yeah.
Of course, he is entirely a content man.
Yeah. Can you hold on one second?
Okay.
Jeanette. Okay, well, I just was... wanted to thank you for your lovely letter, and two, wanted to hear your reaction to the piece.
Well, it's very important, I think.
Yeah, good.
I would begin to stress this immobility of the TV viewer.
Well, I think that's fascinating.
His inability to cope with the eye movements and so on that needed for the printed page.
Yeah, for all practical purposes, with a small size screen, there is no necessity for eye movement. And one, it's a small size screen because you're full. It's almost, who was it? I think Da Vinci used to just draw within a 10-inch area so he didn't have to have any, there would be no distortion and he'd have to have no eye movement.
Uh-huh.
Interesting.
I was thinking of, Jane Austen said, I use a 2x2 bit of ivory on which to write my novels. She thought of 2 inches by 2 inches as the scope of gesture for her characters.
Yeah.
So the most delicate little nuances are the basis of her writing.
Yeah.
It's by the way, it turns it into a sort of Chinese pictogram.
Yes, yes.
That dimension is a 2x2 gives you about the size of a pictogram.
Yes. You know, but the interesting thing, see, I think you're speaking of two things. See, in terms of camera movement, even just film movement, the film in the shutter gate moves something which affects the eye.
Sure.
Now, that's one area, but you can have that on television when they're projecting
you
film.
You can't have a shutter on television.
No, it's not the shutter, but when they're working with film, don't you get that?
I don't think so.
I think you might.
I think on TV you have no film at all. It's only TV.
That's true in terms of its reception, but in terms of the movement, if you run a film on television, if you watch the titles, you can see them jerking as the camera moves up and down that way. But the factor is, with television, you don't have that.
not.
Yeah.
However, the dyslexia problem is a result of immobility and lack of motor skills. Do you know that the people training dealing with the problem are now encouraging trampolines as the only way to develop motor skills?
Marshall, I have to take a long-distance call.
Glad you called.
I can call you back.
I'll be pulling out of here, too.
All right, fine. Well, thanks so much for your...
We'll be in touch.
Okay,
Marshall. Righto.
Bye.
Bye. Hello, Tony.
Hi, Marshall. How are you?
Good to hear you.
I feel like you've been in my room for the last few days because I've seen you on WNBC in the mornings, and I get very angry because they don't treat you nicely.
Which show was that?
It's a show called Not for Women Only.
Oh, yeah. Well, I did two.
Yes, I
tapings.
One with Gerber.
Yeah.
Gerbner, is it?
Yeah, George Gerber.
Yeah, and one with was on today, and I just found that the one with Gerbner, he just talks his full head off and didn't let you...
Well, I told him, are you lecturing to me, George? Did they cut that out?
They cut out that comment.
Yeah.
But they, he just... If you took a stopwatch and timed the amount of time he had and the amount of time you had, it was unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
And then there were questions there that they never allowed you to go into, you know? And, for instance, and one of them is one thing I wanted to ask you about. This idea of women's lib being a violent movement, you know, stemming from TV. That's what I'd love to hear you.
Oh, well, look, TV is right hemisphere. Do you know the two hemisphere thing?
Yes. Now,
TV is right hemisphere.
Yes.
And it's the role-playing hemisphere.
Yeah.
Whereas the other left hemisphere is specialist job-holding hemisphere. And so the men tend to be entirely in the left hemisphere and they're in their training and their work. Women are much more inclined to be role players. That means multiple jobs. And so this, a mother all over the centuries has never had a job. She has a role.
All right, now how did you relate this to a violent movement?
Well, any kind of invasion of any kind of a territory is a form of violence. Pornography invades privacy.
All right. Now I get it.
So any invasion of another territory is violence.
Yes, the women's invading the men's world is violence.
Why, sure.
Yeah, and TV was responsible for it.
Well, it turned off the left hemisphere.
Well, I see it on another level. Now, you tell me whether you think this has any meaning. Basically, if you bring the world into the home, you inherently bring the world into the mind of women, and then they want to get into that world.
Why, sure.
You see? So that's the violence in the...
Well, did you get my piece on the inside-outside?
No.
I'll send it to you. But it concerns, Tony, the fact that North Americans are the only people in the world who go outside to be alone and inside to be social.
Oh, I've heard your thinking on that.
Well, motor car, you see, is the supreme form of privacy
is
outside.
Is that the one that was in the communications magazine?
Yeah, it was in there.
Yeah, I have
you
that.
You have that? Oh,
yes.
Good. Well, now, women, you see, are involved in that. And television, bringing the outside into the home, is upsetting that whole pattern of American life.
Yes, you see, I said that the television and radio had more to do with the women voting than all the women who fought for women's rights.
Oh, sure.
Because once you brought it into the minds of women, you brought women into that field. And the same thing is with the civil rights movement.
Yeah.
Now, the interesting implication in your statement yesterday was that the whole question of crime is a product of the violence of television.
Well, yes, it's lost because there's a loss of identity.
Yes, but you see...
With loss of identity, men become, or people become very violent.
You see, they don't go into the role of commercials and the good... I've been doing interviews with prisoners, and I find that they, firstly, they consider the world... For instance, if you take the Good Life shows, or you take Maude and some of these shows, we will consider them somewhat fantasy. The prisoners consider them reality. They consider the police shows fantasy.
Uh-huh.
Because they know that's not like real life, you see?
Yes.
And so...
But the soaps they regard as real.
The
as
soaps...
As fantasy.
That's right. The soaps they regard as real.
Uh-huh.
The police ones they regard as fantasy.
I see.
Now,
I see.
A fascinating thing is that they also... That you find that the... I consider the crime shows almost like instruction books, and the goals, the thing that gives them goals are the good life shows and the commercials.
Yeah.
So they are more related to the violence than the others. And then the fact that inherently TV makes us an auditory people who are more prone to be violent, you see.
Well, just a moment. Auditory people may be violent when they're in a non-auditory world, but when they're in an auditory world, no.
They're more volatile.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, they are. That's why they can't touch booze.
You know? Yeah.
No, I mean all tribal people
have
to lay off the booze.
Why?
Because it's it drives them up the wall.
Uh-huh.
That is, the Arabs, and whoever, they can't touch it. Well, you know, even in the Jewish world, Tony, they have to go very easy on booze, because the Jew is a tribal man.
You know, I've been getting into something, and tell me what you think of it. Marshall, I have to tell you that it's about 10 years since we've known each other, and I owe you more in this world than I do any other person in terms of contributing to my thinking, and I look at you as the leader in this whole world, and I want you to know it.
Well, Tony, I'm very appreciative.
And,
I appreciate it.
And anything I can do for you, you never hesitate calling on me to ask me to do it. Do you want a videotape of your show yesterday and today?
No, thanks, Tony.
Okay.
But there might be times.
All right, now.
They were certainly stacked against me.
Yeah. Now, I do a piece for a magazine called Media Industry Newsletter. I'm going to send you the whole file of it.
Dandy. Dandy.
Okay, I'll even send you a subscription to it because I do a weekly piece in there. And I'm going into this whole question of what is the effect. Based on seeing your thing yesterday and how they mistreat you, I'm doing a piece on if we observe the effect of having one moderator and three guests, or three moderators and one guest, or one moderator and one guest, which would give you more ability to get into the subject, you see? Now, if you take five doctors and ask them how do you deal with warts or colds or anything like that, when the five doctors answer, you become interested in how five people answer a question differently. You don't pay attention to what they're saying. If you had one person read all the answers, you'd find you'd pay attention to the different answers.
Yeah.
You see?
Yeah.
So, anyway, I've been getting into something which I'd love your thoughts on. Listen to this. Would you call the United States a mobile or a static people? Would you call them more mobile than the Japanese?
Yes.
Well, you see, here's an interesting thing. What I've been doing is I say the question of mobility, since man's feet aren't planted in the ground like trees, the question of mobility is really the relationship between physical movement and communication.
Yeah.
Now, we call ourselves a mobile society because for a while we began to move faster than our we began to move out of our communication territory.
Yeah.
But once our communication territory shifts to the speed of electricity, for all practical purposes, we can reach anyone in the country in the United States
at the same instant.
Within 1/62,000th of a second.
I'll send you a piece I've done on this.
You see, what the effect of this is, we can begin to use in communications, we can begin to use some of the social values of preprint auditory culture.
Yeah. All right.
So
by the way,
I'll send you some commercials I've been doing that have been dealing with shame, dealing with the fact that someone feels that everyone around them has heard the same thing, and you're framing his attitude towards.
Well, look, Tony.
Yeah.
At the speed of light, which is what we're using right now, you don't have a body.
See, when one answers...
On the phone and on the air, you do not have a physical body.
I know. I've taken children's recordings and shown that their concept of media is identical with their concept of God.
Well, look, now this... Well, that's very important. But notice that when you don't have a body, you don't have a private identity either. And you lose your private identity with your physical body. With your physical body.
I wondered what you meant by the democratic effect disappears after, at the speed of light, the democratic effect disappears. You spoke...
Well, that's the individual, the free individual disappears. He becomes a mass man.
Well, you see, you also find that the representative no longer is your representative. You don't need the representative. When we saw
that's right. You have an image instead of a policy or a platform. You have an image.
Well,
charismatic image. Charismatic means looking like a lot of other people.
You see, I've been going into some. I've been replacing the word image with attitude.
That's okay.
You see, I find that
But Jimmy Carter is a Huck Finn. He is a charismatic image. He's Huck Finn in the White House.
Did you see Sunday's paper, Sunday's Times?
No.
Did you get it?
I can.
Well, I'll send you this article. They quote you and they quote me, and we're both saying the same thing. Everyone else is saying something else. But it was a question. I say Carter can burn himself out, and he better be careful. I'll send you this article that was done on Carter in the media. In Sunday's Times. The whole issue was on that.
Oh, gee.
So I'll send you a copy.
Is it the magazine section?
Yes. Sunday's Times. And the article that refers to both of us is the one One second, I'll get it and I'll tell you. Hold on. They quote you, Jimmy Carter's a personification of Marshall McLuhan's cool image. Not surprisingly, the Canadian Oracle is another fan of the president's video persona. But Mr. McLuhan was also among the first to warn of the dangers of playing with the cool fire. Citizens of the global village can be burned by television, even presidents and presidential advisors.
Yeah.
That's what they say. Anyway, he goes into, he says they use my book as the Bible down there in the White House.
Well, good.
I'll send you this whole issue. I feel that the media has made us able to witness the actual thing, therefore we don't need a representative.
That's right.
We need possibly attorneys or...
Your total participation.
We need not representatives, because the representative was sent to Washington to bring us back the news.
That's the old hardware.
Yeah, but we don't need that. We're able to...
Tony, have you seen my book, The Executive's Dropout?
Yes.
Because there we explain the business of software. We're talking now, at the speed of light, everything becomes software, information.
Yeah.
And the old hardware, which is the representative in Washington, is nowhere.
Yeah.
But the shift from software, hardware to software, is what happens at the speed of light.
Well, but do you see? I see actually much greater democracy possible.
Yeah, except that it isn't when you're not dealing with private people. It's really tribal. It's not democratic. You can't. A tribe is not. It does not have any possibility of private people.
Yes, but you can have the whole tribe represented.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
The totem.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, gee, Tony, I'll send you this bit. I have this piece on discarnate man, and I'll send it to you.
And I'll send you these things I've been working on and some of these.
I look forward to getting them very much.
I'm going to put a tape together. Marshall, would you mind in the future if I were to record when we talk so I could make notes on it and so forth? How do you feel about it?
Oh, that's fine.
Okay. I'll send you a tape of a presentation I'm doing on this whole subject, and I'll just talk it to you and put in examples. And
oh, okay.
I can't tell you, Marshall, how much you have meant to my life and to me, and I just...
Well, it makes a lot of sense activities too.
Well, I just feel that you are the leader of this whole new world, and that
it's a right hemisphere world.
You see, what do you feel about the fact that if the right hemisphere is damaged, the left can take over, or vice versa?
Yeah, well, that's like limping.
See,
when one leg gives out, well, you limp. And
what do you do about the fact? See, I find people trying to utilize this, and they don't know how to utilize it.
Yeah.
Because for all
Tony, they don't know that the hemispheres go up or down in their dominance depending on the environment under them. Not in according to the content of the programs, but according to the environment, the hidden ground under them.
See, for instance, they're measuring eye movement on television. That's meaningless.
Yep.
The first thing you put on is going to get eye attention, no matter what it is, even if you put a piece of light there.
That's right.
And so they're measuring eye movement, which was something they utilized in print, but it has no value at all in television because it's an internal thing. It's not the eye movement.
Well, look, please send those things on to me, Tony.
I will, Marshall.
And I'll look up that New York Times.
I'll send it to you.
You bet.
Okay.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you. Bye.
Hello.
Marshall?
Yeah.
Tony.
Oh, good. Thanks for calling, Tony.
How are you?
Oh, very well. I'm just back from a conference where I heard much about you, namely an advertising research conference in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And you're very well known in that group.
That's interesting. Who are they?
Oh, I don't know. It's just the National or something organization, the ARF, Advertising Research, they call them. ARF is the name of their
And who spoke of me?
Oh, well, I'm thinking of Mr. Scissors. Ever run into Mr. Scissors?
No.
You never forget that name, eh?
No. He's a sharp character.
Yeah. He's a very pointed character.
Yeah.
But I met, dozens and dozens of people. As one does on those occasions.
Yeah.
But I had mentioned your work, you see, during my talk.
Yeah.
And so that's what led them then to come up and volunteer comments about you.
Yeah.
Afterward. No, I'd used you in my lecture.
Mm-hmm.
I usually do.
In what context do you?
Usually when I'm talking about television.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the using the eyes and ears.
Yeah.
I always quote page 14 of the Anchor Book. That always impresses them, when you quote the exact page.
Yeah.
But I have a memory for page numbers.
Yeah.
But anyway, how have you been?
Fine. You know, an interesting thing, last week the Washington Post did a column on children in advertising, and they referred to my book as a landmark book, which is nice.
Now, which book is that, Tony?
You know, the Responsive Court.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah. But I'll tell you, I've been doing a column that these people probably have been reading.
Well, they mentioned it, and that's what I called about.
All right, I just made a copy of all of the columns, and I can mail you that.
Well, no, you promised months and months ago to send me that paper every once in a while.
All right, fine. I had told the publication to put you on their mailing list.
No, they never did.
All right, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I have every column I wrote for them, and I'll put that in. I made a duplicate of it.
Sure, yeah.
And I'll send that to you Monday.
Well, thank you, Tony. You know, I've been doing a book called The Laws of the Media for years now.
Yeah, and how has that come?
Oh, it's pretty well finished. On the other hand, I hesitate to go to press because I make so many discoveries every day.
I know, isn't it? You know, that's such a thing because every time anything happens, you think of it in a new frame,
absolutely,
in a new context.
Absolutely.
And
you'll enjoy a lot of the book because of your technical interest.
The
doorbell.
I'm doing.
I was telling Corinne that the doorbell is a buzzing.
Yeah, I'm doing a book called The Second God.
Yeah, is there any relation to the first one?
Well, you see, I say the first God created man, and he's been trying to make man moral ever since.
Uh-huh.
And man created the second God, and he's trying to make that moral ever since.
By the way, I have one of my basic things. things lately has been the discovery that when you're on the telephone or on the air, you don't have a physical body.
Yeah.
When you don't have a physical body, you don't have an identity. When you don't have an identity, you don't have any morals. So that the electronic man is a man without morals.
Well, that relates to the fact that truth is not important. It's effect that's important, that really affects people. You know, I have a tape that I ought to send you a copy of. It's this astronaut speaking to about 400 or 500 priests.
Yeah.
And a very interesting thing. He says that he's speaking about the moment that he had. The only moment he had to observe in a personal way was when his partner's camera broke down. And then he could look at the earth as a responding individual.
Oh my God.
Now, a fascinating thing is, we've talked, I'll send you his tape, okay?
Wonderful.
All right, now, here's a fascinating thing. We've spoken about media being the extension of man.
Well, my nervous system now.
All right, but he, in essence, is a flip.
Yeah.
Because here's man being an extension of media.
Oh, yeah.
When he's the eyes and ears and emotional sensing system at the end of man's media.
Yeah, they're becoming just a great big insect that swallows it.
Yep. Fascinating.
Well, I'd love to have that tape, Tony.
I'll send that plus this other thing on Monday morning.
Wonderful.
Marshall, I can't tell you again, I always feel I have to say it to you, how much you mean to me in my life, in my thinking, in my, you know, I just...
Well, it's kind of you, Tony.
I owe so much...
I owe a great deal to you.
Well, then...
I do indeed.
Well, it's a mutual feeling then, because
yes.
I just have such unbelievable respect for... When anyone asks me about Marshall McLuhan, I say... He's a shooting star that leaves little holes in his path that we mortals can fill in.
Yeah, but you know, very few people have read a word of McLuhan, but they've all read about McLuhan.
Yeah, but those who've read you really need experience to understand you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's only against real experience and work that one can really deeply understand the depth of your insights.
Well, thank you, Tony, but I keep working at it, believe me.
Well,
I think that minus our bodies, we tend to be in trouble. It's not a healthy, happy time. The sender is sent at the speed of light. You don't send a message; you send yourself. The sender is sent.
You know, I'm into a very interesting thing. I say all broadcasting is narrowcasting.
Is narrow?
Is narrowcasting.
Yeah. Good.
Because you never are out to reach everybody. You're out to reach certain people.
Yep.
Now, I have been doing ads recently where I'm out to reach one man. I broadcast, and I'm out to reach one man. You want to hear what it is?
Yeah.
All right. I'm doing ads for World Medical News, and ostensibly I'm talking to doctors, okay?
Yeah.
So I'm advertising World Medical News to doctors. Interestingly, the magazine isn't sold, so you don't need to advertise it. But I run these ads in the city where the pharmaceutical companies are.
Yeah.
And I am talking to doctors, and since the people don't have earlids, they hear what they're interested in.
Yep.
Their interest determines what they hear. Now, I start off the commercial with, are you a doctor? How do you learn about the drugs you prescribe? Read about, and then I go into listing a bunch of things in this magazine. Well, that automatically tunes in. Oh, then I first do research, or I call it pre-search, to find out what station this man listens to.
Sure.
And I put it on that drive time at that station. In 3 days, I sold a whole year's advertising for the McGraw-Hill to that company.
That reminds me, not McGraw-Hill, but Harcourt Brace Ivanovich are remaindering my book, The Executive Dropout.
Yeah.
You've got it for a buck.
Well, I have it. I got it a few years ago.
If you have some friends who might like to have it for a dollar, why don't tell them?
Uh-huh. Okay, I will.
It won't be advertised.
Yeah.
Marlboro Books does the best advertising at all, isn't
it? Excuse me? Hello?
Marlboro Books.
Yeah.
I just have a drink of coffee. The Marlboro Books, the second-hand market,
yeah,
is the best advertiser you can get.
That's interesting.
That's the only time that people ever see a book.
Yeah.
When it gets down there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good to hear from you, Tony, and I look forward to that material.
Okay, Marshall, I'll send it out Monday.
Dandy. And how's the family?
Everybody's fine. The
That's
children
wonderful.
Are beautiful and fine. How's your family?
Oh, it's very diversified. Terry has made a film. She's off at Cannes. Peddling it, selling it.
Where's
in competition.
Where's Eric?
Eric is right here. That is in Toronto, and he's been working very hard here.
What's he doing?
We're finishing off a doctorate.
Oh, that's
in
nice.
In English Lit, yeah.
Oh, that's lovely.
Oh, he's having a ball. He really loves the work.
Good.
We're all blooming and booming.
Any good jokes?
Oh, sure. That's the moment. I wonder about the old guy on his 104th birthday. He says, you know, if I thought I was going to last so long, I would have taken better care of myself.
Marshall McLuhan is here now. He'll take the call. He's just gone to the other office.
Fine.
Hello.
Hi, Marshall.
Hello, Tony.
Happy birthday.
Well, thank you. Do you keep a list of those?
No, but I saw it on the news today.
Oh, my gosh.
You're a public figure.
Oh, gosh. It was on the news. Well, they must be flat out of information.
Well, it's 104 and a half here.
Oh, gosh.
You know, the city is melting.
Ours is broken. Our temperature was, we were about 100 yesterday. And it broke today. It's down to 80, thank God.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Probably hit there, come down fairly soon.
How have you been?
Pretty good. We've been away to Australia and Fiji and Honolulu and Los Angeles.
Wow.
And had quite a lot of exciting contacts, interesting people. Spread the Tony Schwartz news far and wide. That is, everywhere I go, I talk about using the eye as an ear. And I give your book, and I think... they hasten to buy it.
Uh-huh.
You know, page 14 of your book says that. The TV uses the eye as an ear. Boy, that sends them. And it should, too. Do you know, Tony, I'm so frustrated by encountering this solid block against the interest in the medium rather than in the content that I've almost decided to go back to commenting on content. You know, it's apropos, for example, a thing like Star Wars.
I'll tell you, I think the opposite is true, Marshall. I think at this point, there is more interest. There was that series in the Washington Post with your article. There was a series.
I know, but I was still fighting against that blank wall. And everybody's interested in content. But, for example, have you seen Star Wars?
No, I haven't. My wife and daughter saw it yesterday. My son saw it a few weeks ago.
They liked it?
They liked it.
Yeah, well, now, it is very nostalgic. It's all old stuff.
It's all old Buck Rogers. John Kerry is here, and he's...
Yeah, and it was also the Wizard of Oz. And,
yes.
And also a lot of old wartime films about fighter pilots and so on.
What John said was interesting. He said, although everybody is talking about the visual excitement in it, that most of the visuals become more meaningful because of the way the sound is handled with them.
That's true. That's true.
You know?
Now, on the other hand, as I say, I'm getting fed up with the simple-minded bias of our world. It's not just people. It's the whole world. I mean, it's our whole culture.
Con Edison says that the power failure here was an act of God. The people who looted say it was an act of God, and God gave them their chance to get the Pampers that their children don't have for their bottoms, you know, and now we got all the Pampers we want, baby. You know, they looted the paper diapers from the stores.
Yeah,
and then Andrew Young, the UN ambassador, says, of course people will steal when the lights are out. Now, So Con Edison had a technological breakdown, and the people had a theological breakdown.
And was it content or medium? Both. There was a failure of medium.
Yeah.
And it gave them a chance to grab the content. By the way, here I got a nice one from Stephanie, and my daughter, at lunch today.
Yeah.
She said that a friend of hers told her that the reason for the hijackings was that the speed up in apprehension, the speed with which they could close in on these characters, forced them to grab hostages. They had no way of escaping in bank robberies, etc. The cops are there so fast that the only resource was to have hostages.
So they could get away.
Well,
that's fantastic.
Yeah, that's a change in the medium, you see. The medium itself, the ground, the resources, the speed of the resources, made it impossible to rob anything anymore without having a gun at somebody's head.
Basically, it comes from thinking about some of the calls we've had on the whole question of the effect of the inward turn on the turning inward of media, you know, the Easternizing of the West.
TV is an inner trip.
That's right. Now, the point that I went into here, I'll send you this. The point I went into is the question of, firstly, of what this means in terms of media.
Yeah.
It means that the most powerful weapon we can use to affect social behavior is shame. See?
Yeah.
And I've shown scripts and how we've applied it in various places, and it means that we ought to give up free public service time on television and use task-oriented paid media. And I went into why and how. Now,
by the way, the old punishment of putting people in the stocks just to make public spectacles of them was pure shame.
That's right.
Expose them and put them in the stocks for a few hours. Let people laugh at them.
That's right. Now, so I've written this piece, and I'll send this to you. Now, there is also the question of, really, I think we need to separate the study of reception from perception.
I agree.
And secondly, along with with reception, we find that we begin to have to examine the interrelation of cognition and recognition.
I have been arguing that recognition, instant replay, is the biggest technological development of our age.
That's right. I've been saying that with reception, we have to study recognition, and replay is one of the important things to study.
It's a huge revolution.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it changes the nature of baseball, football, everything.
But it also changes the nature of the study of history.
Oh, well, history is all now. At the speed of light, there ain't no past.
Yes, but the way to teach it is with replay.
Yeah, I know. That's a good point. I'd love to see the piece. Please,
I'm going to send it to
please
you.
Please send it on.
I'll send it to you today. I'll mail it to you today.
You say it's on
Are
it?
You going to be in New York next
yes,
week?
Yes. No, I'm coming in Sunday night, and I have a couple of two-hour seminars for Lou Forestdale.
Yeah.
On Monday and Tuesday.
Yeah.
And I'm going to play with the laws of the media. That's a book I've done for Doubleday, but which hasn't been printed.
When will it be out?
Oh, I don't know. But the book has been written, they have it, and some excerpts of it are coming out in Etc. magazine.
Which magazine?
Etc.
Oh.
Coming out there maybe the next issue. Let's see, that's who's editing that mag now? It's Neil Postman. No, not Neil Postman.
Yeah, I saw that magazine, so I have it.
Yeah,
I'll get the issue.
It's coming out there.
Yeah.
But anyway, they're going to have a seminar with various people in attendance, and it's about the behavior of the media in terms of what I call my tetrads. Anyway, I don't suppose any chance of you getting to Columbia.
Yes, I could.
Well, let's think about it then.
When is it?
It's on Monday, Tuesday. Now, I think, do you know Lou Forestdale at all?
I went to hear you speak the last time you were there.
Oh, well, let's, maybe you have his phone number.
No, I don't.
I do. I can give you his phone number.
Yeah.
And he'll tell you the exact times that I'll be available, or I'll be on deck, okay?
Are you free any time in the evening or anything like that?
Well, that's a hard question.
Yeah.
I just don't know.
All right, then.
I'm entirely in his
hands.
When
will you be back in Canada?
I think I come back Tuesday night.
All right, well, I'll mail this piece to you.
Oh, yeah, I'll be here.
Yeah.
I'll get that information about Lou right now.
Okay.
Morning.
She's getting it.
Okay.
How's the family? How's the family?
The family's all fine, and it's lovely talking with you. You sound wonderful.
Well, we've had, here's the information from Mrs. Stewart.
I have it here. His home phone is 865.
Yes.
8604.
Fine, I have that.
Okay.
Do you think, Mr. Stewart, that he might have changed as a result of that switch in the habitation?
No, he said that the other address is the same building.
I see.
It's another entrance,
yeah.
That's all.
Okay.
They've had to switch entrances because of the danger from outside.
Yeah.
I have his office phone here, too. It's 678-3798.
Fine.
And that's to Columbia.
Fine.
Okay?
I'll call.
Right.
Yeah, he'll give you the dope, and
yeah.
I hope you can make it because we could. You would have a ball at this session on the tetrads because it's not theoretic.
What are tetrads?
Well, the tetrads being the four points, every single human artifact, whether it's a word or a safety pin or a bulldozer, has four aspects. And, first, that it enhances something. Second, it obsolesces something. And third, it brings back something that had been obsolesced much earlier. And fourth, it flips into the opposite form when pushed all the way. Now, this is true of every single human artifact, including television or including any scientific law. And so we're going to go through a whole bunch of them together in groups of people and see what we can discover to see were there any weaknesses in this observation or any advantages.
Yeah.
And the discovery is based upon simply rule of thumb. I simply discovered that this happens with regard to every single human artifact and that it had nothing to do with any theory at all. It's a dynamic within the artifact itself. And therefore, you can predict, for example, what will come after credit in, say, the monetary system.
Yeah.
You can start and say, you start with point A, or in the tetrad, with credit. A, what does it enhance? What does it obsolesce? What does it bring back that was pushed out earlier? And what does it flip into when pushed all the way? Now, credit probably has not yet reached that all-the-way point and has not yet flipped. But money flipped into credit when pushed all the way, and credit isn't money.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, so you can use it as a technique of discovery and prediction and control. But anyway, you can use it as a scientific principle.
Well.
So we'll be working on the tetrads, among other things. And it would be a great thrill to have you there, Tony, if you can make it.
Well, I'll try, Marshall. I'll call and find out when it is and see if I can fit it in.
Yeah, it's on Monday and Tuesday.
Fine.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the happy birthday. Good to hear from you.
Oh, you don't know.
There's lots to tell you about when I see you. Believe me, a lot of things have been happening.
Yeah. Good. Good.
Okay.
Okay.
By the way, you do know the book Take Today, huh?
Yes, I have it.
Yeah. You're one of the few.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, Marshall.
Bye.
Bye. Received media almost has a religious quality. It internalizes certain social values, or can.
Yeah, electric media, Tony, the one we're using now, and all the others, you have no body. You have a voice without a body. When you're on the air, radio or TV, you have no body. An angel without a body, or a mind without a body. This has a profound effect on the user. You just remember that at the speed of light, nobody has a body.
What was your comment on sound being like God.
That the center is everywhere and the margin is nowhere. That is, in fact, the old Neoplatonic definition of God. But it happens also to be a definition of acoustic space. Acoustic space is a sphere whose center is everywhere and whose margin is nowhere. That is physically the fact about acoustic space. Psychologists don't know that.
One of the peculiar results of this profound involvement through circuitry, as compared with the old detachment of literacy and visual culture, one of the effects has been the increasing orientalization of the Western world. Even as we pour and lavish our 19th century technology on the East, we are doing to ourselves the exact opposite. We are orientalizing ourselves by going inward. And it's very easy to see them going westward and very difficult to see ourselves going inward because it is so environmental with us that it becomes almost imperceptible. You can, however, if you do inventory, discover the amazing rise of Oriental values in the arts and in all sorts of produce and all sorts of habits. We're doing this to ourselves. Nobody's doing it to us. We are orientalizing ourselves while westernizing the East and seemingly taking much credit to ourselves for the westernizing and not even noticing what we're doing to ourselves. One of the major changes that's come into the world with the electronic environment as a total surround is that the audience becomes workforce instead of being target for campaigns. Speed up creates PR. Instant information creates involvement. Slow movement of information creates detachment. Instant information creates involvement in depth. One of the hidden factors in our environment today is this. When you have an instant information structure, you put outside as your environment the human subconscious. We tend to talk about the increase of consciousness during this electric phase. What is increasing enormously is the subconscious. That is our new environment. The subconscious is a world in which we store everything, not something.
The evolutionary process, it no longer belongs to the biology of our bodies. The extensions of our bodies create these new environments, like the electric one. And these are the location now of the evolutionary process. A new environment like TV or computer or telephone or radio can compress millions of years of evolution in seconds.
One of the major changes that's come into the world with the electronic environment is that the audience becomes workforce instead of being target for campaigns. When you have an instant information structure, you put outside as your environment the human subconscious. Instant information creates involvement in depth.
Stripping off storyline is a normal result of speed-up electric technology. The newspaper lost its storyline when it got telegraphic services. The umpteen little stories without a unifying one. You see, in earlier days of the newspaper, each day's paper came out as a kind of big essay or editorial, all unified. Then as the news services improved, it became impossible to unify, and so they broke down the storyline. The disappearance of storyline goes along with the disappearance of clotheslines, hemlines, stag lines, you name it. The line in that, in as a means of organizing human energy is disappearing. I don't say this is a good or bad thing. I don't even pretend to know. But it disappears under the impact of an all-at-once technology. Now, in modern advertising, there's much the same revolution going forward as has been going forward in painting and poetry and in
the world of entertainment.
With the audience moving more and more into the act, modern advertising is more and more a substitute for the product. Because of its rich resources and means of sensuous solicitation, modern advertising can give you the effect of almost anything without your having to bother about having the thing at all. Tony Schwartz is in the audience, and he is an expert in this very department.
The power of giving effect without thinking
is entirely within his domain. You see, the advertisers have been puzzled for a long time
in their surveys
to discover that people don't really read ads until they own the thing. If you own that icebox or that car, then you notice the ads very much, because this is how you get your satisfaction. The ad world then becomes an enormous area of information service, enabling you to substitute the effect for the thing.
Speed up creates PR. Instant information creates involvement. Slow movement of information creates detachment. Instant information creates involvement in depth. One of the hidden factors in our environment today is this. When you have an instant information structure, you put outside as your environment the human subconscious. We tend to talk about the increase of consciousness during this electric phase. What is increasing enormously is the subconscious. That is our new environment. The subconscious is a world in which we store everything, not something.
It has made the traditional skills and the traditional ways of measuring human and developmental skills like language and reading obsolete. These skills show that the heavy viewers of television in childhood as well as in adulthood are not as competent, do not achieve in our standard tests.
Well, George,
even if you control for socioeconomic factors. No, it used to be that education used to be a measure of somebody's intelligence.
To be a quantity. Now it isn't.
Now that's right, it's changing. But now it's not education. Now our studies find that if you can tell whether somebody is a heavy and light viewer, you can predict the skills of that person better than if you know whether it's high or low income or high or low education.
The world that we live in and take for granted as our world, the first world, was created by Gutenberg with his lineality of types, everybody a reader. The first mass production in the world was printing. Everybody could become a reader. Today, with Xerox, everybody a publisher. Turns Gutenberg upside down and ends that whole program. Now, the Xerox literally turns everybody into a publisher, creates the underground press. And creates total diversity of points of view and submerges everybody. But the effect of the Xerox is, I study effects, not inputs. It doesn't matter what you put on Xerox. The fact is whoever uses it is a publisher. Now, in printing, everybody became a reader. This was the origin of democracy. And at the speed of light, which is Xerox, the democratic effect disappears.
What happens in television?
Television is at the speed of light, and it's entirely an acoustic image. It is not a visual image.
Dr. McLuhan, you couldn't hold back the press. You can't hold back television. It's here.
I'm not saying to hold it back. I'm simply saying study what it is. One of the big violent events
I'll let you come.
Is Women's Lib, and this program is related to that.
Liberation.
Women's lib is an extreme form of violence and upset.
Explain
maybe,
that.
Maybe to you.
Entirely related to television and TV.
The audience and myself are buzzing at that remark. You better explain it quickly before we become violent.
TV as a medium fosters a very inclusive attitude to life, role-playing, in fact, not fragmented, specialized job holding. The nature of TV, with its inclusive acoustic character, is to foster role-playing. Now, women are great role-players. Men are not. Men are job holders fond of repetitive tasks. Women are multiple task people, able to slip from one to another. A mother has 100 jobs, not one. And so they are born role-players. And role-playing is the very opposite of our whole society.
It has made the traditional skills and the traditional ways of measuring human and developmental skills like language and reading obsolete. These skills show that the heavy viewers of television in childhood as well as in adulthood are not as competent, do not achieve well, in our standard tests.
Well, George.
Even if you control for socioeconomic factors. No, it used to be that education used to be a measure of somebody's intelligence.
It used to be a quantity. Now it isn't.
Now, that's right, it's changing. But now it's not education. Now, our studies find that if you can tell whether somebody is a heavy and light viewer, you can predict the skills of that person better than if you know whether it's high or low income or high or low education.
George, speaking of diagnosis...
Hold on a minute. Let me introduce the third point, and then perhaps you'd like to address yourself to anyone.
I'm a diagnostician, too.
Good. The third point is going back to violence. Now, you said that our studies show that violence is an all-time high. That is true. Across the board, across all networks, across all kind of programming, by whatever standard or whatever measure you want to choose, ours or somebody else's, it doesn't matter. But the real question is, what does that mean? What does it do? What is the role of violence in television, drama, news, and in human life?
And does it affect the people who are watching them commit crimes?
Well, when I say what is the role, I'm essentially asking what are the lessons of violence. So we find that the role of violence is to demonstrate power, and the lessons of violence is to establish or maintain a social hierarchy in which some people are more afraid than others, therefore can be more easily controlled.
We're going to have to take a violent pause for a second. Come right back in a few minutes, and we'd like to pursue this. We'll be right back.
Please. George, you're not.
Dr. McLuhan, you were kind of champing at the bit a few minutes ago. You wanted to get at Dr. Gerdner there.
No, I was simply going to mention that the world that we live in and take for granted as our world, the first world, was created by Gutenberg with his lineality of types, everybody a reader. The first mass production in the world was printing. Everybody could become a reader. Today, with Xerox, everybody a publisher. Turns Gutenberg upside down and ends that whole program. Now, the Xerox literally turns everybody into a publisher, creates the underground press, and creates total diversity of points of view and submerges everybody. But the effect of the Xerox is, I study effects, not inputs. It doesn't matter what you put on Xerox. The fact is, whoever uses it is a publisher. Now, in printing, everybody became a reader. This was the origin of democracy. And at the speed of light, which is Xerox, the democratic effect disappears.
What happens in television?
Television is at the speed of light. And it's entirely an acoustic image. It is not a visual image.
Dr. McLuhan, you couldn't hold back the press. You can't hold back television. It's here.
I'm not saying to hold it back. I'm simply saying study what it is.
All right. One of the factors we want to study is this question of violence that keeps coming up in recent months. And Dr. Gerdner, you have been roundly attacked in recent months, too, by one of the networks that says your violence. Explain for us, what is your violence index? What do we mean by violence?
We mean by violence the overt expression of physical force that hurts and kills people. A very conservative and very unambiguous, clear-cut definition. That is what we mean by violence. When you hit somebody or kill somebody, that's violence.
Why do you use comedic violence as well? I mean, if I give Frank a push in fun, or if a clown pushed over and knocked over another clown, you count that as a violent act.
Comedic violence is the most brutal and the most gruesome. In most cartoons, you don't just give a gentle push. You break him into pieces, and he may or may not be recreated. But the reason we do that is that sugarcoating a pill doesn't eliminate its effects. Humor is an excellent vehicle for many lessons, including aggression, including violence. If you give him a push and he doesn't get hurt, we don't count it. We need four trained coders before we count anything, including violence.
Well, supposing you have Donnie and Marie, and I understand that if Donnie pinches Marie, and Marie goes ow, and even if she were to laugh later or the audience were to laugh, that is considered the same violent act as somebody pushing a criminal or a criminal pushing a victim.
No pushing is violence by our definition.
What pinching is, though.
No pushing, no pinching, not even a pie in the face if it's an idle or not credible threat. We count only credible and
George,
serious damage to the integrity
George, you're
of the human
using
being.
Violence in the hardware sense.
I'm using violence in the hardware sense, but I'm really not as interested. I mean, all you need to remember is that if we count violence, everybody would. We discount many things about which there is any disagreement.
I'm saying that the violence is invasion. That when you are invaded by an alien force, that is violence.
Not any kind of invasion is violence. You may be invading my private thoughts right now, and I don't consider that violence.
Electronically, you don't have
any privacy. There's one distinction. Right. Let me get in the middle of the argument.
Yes.
All right. And I think what's happened is Dr. Gerbner has developed a violence index profile for certain social science examinations and parts of the culture that he very validly uses this for the purpose that he wants to use it. What's happened is that his violence profile index has been misused and become a mechanical count kind of measure of the amount of violence. I disagree with him that there is more violence on television than there has been before. It depends on how you count and what you count. And the broadcasters have taken an entirely different position. And it isn't a matter of mechanical count of how many pushes or how many shoves, or was he pushed in front of the car or was he pushed out away from the car. It's been our position that you have to look at it in the creative elements of an entertainment program. How does it fit in context? Are there modifiers? Is there humor? Is there fantasy? Are there consequences? Is it being used gratuitously, excessively? Is it being used for shock or sensationalization? Is the writer putting it in merely to titillate the audience? And these are the kind of evaluations that, from an entertainment creative written word or visual word, has more significance to us than whether or not it is causing, and I think Dr. Gerbner has said before, certain results in terms of the power structures of society, which I'm not really concerned about.
Right, well, I think that's quite true. We are not interested in defending corporate policy or attacking corporate policy. We're interested in finding out what goes on.
But teaching
the power structure of society is a lot more important than defending a network's policy against attack.
Well,
we are interested in all the lessons that come out of violence as a social scenario in which people are victims.
So, and we're interested in attracting audiences with well-qualified programming.
Look, one of the big violent events is Women's Lib, and this program is related to that.
Liberation.
Women's Lib is an extreme form of violence and upset.
Explain that.
Maybe to you.
Entirely related to television and TV.
The audience and myself are buzzing at that remark. You better explain it quickly before we become violent.
TV as a medium fosters a very inclusive attitude to life, role-playing, in fact, not fragmented, specialized job-holding. The nature of TV, with its inclusive acoustic character, is to foster role-playing. Now, women are great role-players. Men are not. Men are job-holders fond of repetitive tasks. Women are multiple-task people, able to slip from one to another. A mother has 100 jobs, not one. And so they are born role-players.
If
role-playing is the very opposite of our whole society.